are going to finally finish the 21st chapter. Finally get, now there's three subject matter in this chapter. You know, it's really, really dense in this chapter. And I hope, I'm one of these people who, try to go through it with a fine tooth comb, I guess you might say, maybe a rough one, but at least a comb, and find if I find something new or different or something I didn't pay attention to before. And all these years I studied it, and I says, do I find anything different in the last part of book of Genesis? So we're going to have Genesis chapter 21, verses 22 to the end of the chapter.
At that time, Abimelech and Philcol, the commander of his army, said to Abraham, God is with you in all that you do. Now therefore swear to me here by God that you will not deal falsely with me or with my descendants or with my prosperity. But as I have dealt kindly with you, so you deal with me and with the land where you have sojourned. And Abraham said, I will swear. When Abraham reproved Abimelech about the well of water that Abimelech's servants had seized, Abimelech said, I do not know who has done this thing. You did not tell me, and I have not heard of it until today. So Abraham took sheep and oxen and gave them to Abimelech. And the two men made a covenant. Abraham set seven ewe lambs of the flock apart. And Abimelech said to Abraham, what is the meaning of these seven ewe lambs that you have set apart? He said, the seven ewe lambs you will take from my hand, that this may be a witness for me that I dug this well. Therefore, that place was called Beersheba, because there both of them swore an oath. So they made a covenant at Beersheba. Then Abimelech and Philcol, the commander of his army, rose up and returned to the land of the Philistines. Abraham planted a tamarisk tree in Beersheba and called there on the name of the Lord, the everlasting God. And Abraham sojourned many days in the land of the Philistines.
So what's your input about this last part of chapter 21? What was it about? The well, covenant. What was it about? Any other ideas? Any rebuke? Okay. Let's be careful. It's easy for us to miss something in the very first verse. Chapter 21, verse 22. And this Abimelech came with his, it says his captain or commander of the army. Basically, his name means a mouth. That's what his name means. Of all mouth. What it means, he was a spokesman. He is the one that speaks for Abimelech. And that's what that word means. It literally means a mouth. A large mouth or a big mouth or all mouth. And we looked at it in our modern English and said, what's a dumb way to call it? No, a spokesman speaks real careful words. So basically what you're hearing here is perhaps more than from Abimelech speaking, you're hearing his right-hand man, or actually the word he's called a commander, but he actually is Tsar. You know what Tsar is? It's either a prince, a leader, or a chief, or a captain. Not always means he is the commander. Generally speaking, when you have a king, like Abimelech, and then you have his next person that's his spokesman, is probably a relative of his. So, you know, we have to be careful that we just think he's commander of an army. Well, yes, he was a commander of the host of the men, but it's not a negative terminology. His name was very interesting in that it's his words come from the word mouth. So he was a spokesman. He was one that's speaking for the king. So we need, the next thing he said is this. Elohim is with you in all that you do. So we have an acknowledgement. This guy already is very sure of something. Now remember what happened in the 20th chapter? We're in the 21st chapter here. 20th chapter about to happen. Started out with a man named Abimelech, right? And Abraham didn't tell him everything that Abraham, we would say, should have told him. And what happened to Abimelech? Well, something not very nice happened. And God came and said, in a dream, I am going to stop you from doing this. And Abimelech says, I didn't know she was married. I didn't know. And he says, and my heart, my integrity, right? We say, oh no, he did, he was lying. No. God says, yes, I know, in your heart, your integrity, you're trite, you're right, you're true, and you did that was right and good and honorable and respectful. And then he turned around and he told Abimelech one other thing. Abraham was a prophet. First time that word shows up, by the way, in the Torah, or actually the book of Genesis. So first time it shows up. So now he comes here, verse 23. Now therefore, this is what his question of Abraham. Therefore, swear unto me by Elohim that you will not deal falsely with me, with my offspring, or with my grandchildren, basically. What did Abraham say? I don't have to do anything like that. I will. Now, we can have a rotten attitude one way or the other, but Abraham submitted to this concept. Why would Abraham do that? Because he's a nice guy? He went to war, defeated five nations, very powerful man. He had a greater armed forces than this Abimelech had. Remember, it's all like about 370 years, plus or minus, since the flood. So it's not very long in history here after the flood. So why would Abimelech come and say this to him? You remember what happened in the 21st chapter? 20th chapter there? Well, that's way, the 20th chapter. Let's just backtrack there for just a moment. Verse 8, he says, and Abimelech rose early in the morning, it was after God came into his dream, and called on his servants and told them the things in their hearing, and the men were very angry, mad, frustrated, hateful, afraid. Okay? So keep that part in mind. And I told you last time we studied the book of 20th chapter that the eternal creator of heaven and earth said, you are an upright man. Right? So now we're in the 20th chapter, 21st chapter, and we're coming to the end of a very interesting place. Now, Abimelech said, verse 9 here in chapter 20, called Abraham and said, what have you done to us? Now, do you think that was a nice statement? Says, oh, Abraham, what would you do? No, he was troubled, fearful. Fear came across them all. Because you know what happened previously before the 20th chapter? What happened before the 20th chapter? Sodom and Gomorrah. They knew who did it. They knew it was Elohim. They knew it was God. So when you get the 20th chapter and all of a sudden this dream comes through, that guy would be terrified and frightened. And he's going to be terrified and frightened because, wow, look at happened to Sodom, Gomorrah, and the other countries, cities around about it. They don't want to destroy them. He didn't want to be destroyed. So fear was very, very prominent, I would say, soon after Sodom and Gomorrah to a big region back there. Because remember, the smoke rose and scattered all over the place, all the way to even where Abimelech lived. So they saw all that stuff. So fear was pretty struck. And so he wanted to, what are you doing? What were you trying to do? What did you have in view or in mind that you did this thing to me? Didn't tell me she was your wife. Now, we think, well, wait a minute. Now, she's an 80-some-odd-year-old lady. But see, she wasn't some 80-year-old lady that looked like just 80-year-old lady. She was extremely attractive. For some reason, I don't know, that's not my business. Maybe she went to Hollywood. But nonetheless, she went and had her face, she was a very beautiful lady. She didn't like old, crimpled, barely move, old shoulders are bad. Yes.
Well, they lived twice as long as well. I mean, Abraham went to 175, so that's middle age, maybe 45, 40.
But Abimelech wasn't up there in years. Abimelech was a young man. Because later on, he deals with Isaac. Okay, and Isaac now in his 40s. Okay, so we'll find out about this guy. He was not an old man. But he was just a king. So I want to put our thoughts in mind. And so now let's go back to chapter 21. He uses a very strange word, but we probably find it very unusual. He uses the word in Hebrew of shakar. Shakar. Which literally means to do or to deal falsely. To fake. To trick. To cheat. And most of the time in Hebrew, this word is to lie. Majority of the time, that's translated into a lie. What comes out of your mouth. So he says, don't do this to me. Remember, they just had a terrible dream. Right? Frightful dream. And so he said, and that's why Abraham says, okay, I'll take the oath. I won't do it that way. I won't deal that way with you anymore. And this is fascinating. Stop and think about this for just a minute. Something else took place. What do you think took place? He translated it and it says the 25th verse, that he rebuked him. Well, in Hebrew, that word does not mean harshness, always. Yes, it can be. Remember, the same word was used about Sarah. When she said, Abimelech says, I rebuke you. I'm correcting the situation in front of you. This is what I'm going to give to your husband for what has transpired. It's not always a negative terminology. I have to be careful what we're reading inside of text and what's happening here. So he comes along here and he says, we have discussed something else before we take an oath. It's about that well. Why was a well so important? Because of what?
For the flock.
Life source, okay. Wells are all over the place. This particular well is nailed out. And what did Abraham say? He says, your servants have seized it. You remember during the time of Lot and Abram, you would say, hey, come on, Abimelech, you're responsible for your men. You are guilty. Okay? Now, both Abram and Lot were responsible for their men, right? Were Abram and Lot irresponsible for not handling their servants who are fighting amongst themselves? Well, we can say yes. So the old man is responsible. Sometimes people do things either assuming they have the authority, like they did with Abram and they did with Lot, and they fought amongst themselves. And when the two men figured out, oh, this is not right, we got to stop this part. Instead of just correcting their men, they chose to depart and separate because it was not going to solve the problem. Their men, their servants are still going to fight with one another. Not necessarily with war, but over things. This is the same thing here. Remember, what did God say about this king? You are a lousy, rotten king. You're a liar, you're a cheat, you're a thief, and you're a robber. What did he say? Upright. Has integrity. Truthfulness. So we could accuse or assume or make an assumption that this guy is just lying through his teeth. But it's easy to do that because Abraham's our hero. And everybody else is the bad guy. But that's not what it says here. And he said, I did not know until right now, today. I didn't understand what was going on. I had no idea about that well. Did he fight about it? No. Lot, Abraham then took sheep and ox and gave them to Abimelech. Now, this is just the opposite in the 20th chapter. Remember what happened in the 20th chapter? Abimelech gave him sheep and oxen and gold and silver. Here, Abraham was giving sheep and an oxen. And then the men made a covenant with each other. What do you think that covenant was made up of? What was it about? Was it about the well? And don't do false with me. I've been kind to you. And Abraham says, yes, I'll make an oath. I'll be kind to you as you've been kind to me. That's the bottom line of that oath. Real simple. That's why Abimelech came. Now, let's continue on. Then verse 28, and Abram set 7 ewes, a lamb, by the flock. I want to backtrack on one thing. The word swear. I've told you this before. This is not rehash. What does the word swear mean? Actually, it is an oath. And it is pronounced how? In Hebrew, it's pronounced as shava, or shavar, shava, which we have the word seven comes from, which is sheva. Now, what does that really refer to? An oath really means to be complete. You'll carry out your word to the end. And it's related to the word seven because seven has a very important number with God. What do you think number seven is? What?
Complete.
Where did we get that from? Sabbath, okay. When was it instituted? When he completed his work. Oh, now it's finished. It's like God swore an oath. Didn't he? And he completed his task. On the seventh day, he completed it. So that's where we get this thing about seven and Shavuot. So, Abimelech had a question. And I'd like to almost ask you that question. Verse 29. What does it say? Yeah, what's this all about? Do you know why? Oh, put yourself in this man's foot. Or shoe. Or seat. Or whatever you want to call it. And somebody, you had a... He tricked you before in your mind. And now you say, we got to stop. Don't do that to me anymore. And he says, okay, I swear I will not do it anymore. And he brings up this ox. The sheep. And he sees it over there. There's seven. There's an ox. And they talk about the well. Okay, got that. And then he says, why did you set them aside for? Why did Abraham set the 7 ewes aside, separate from?
Well, one of the things that Abraham was really careful about was don't ever take something from someone without giving whatever they could possibly want so that it protects his good name.
Okay. So we're coming to this point that Abraham has to assure Abimelech that it's his will. Now, when you give away 6 female sheep, what are you giving away? Wealth. Remember, that world was animals was the wealth, and the female animal was worth more than the male. You make money with the female sheep. You don't make that much money with the male sheep. You make a lot more with a female. And so he's given away, in a sense, his wealth. Seven times. And what did Abimelech do? What situation was? Then Abraham turned around and says, I have taken 70 ewe lambs from my hand, and they may be my witness that I have dug this well. What would you, if you were this guy? And, you know, in that kind of society, animals was a very wealthy, you were very wealthy. And all of a sudden, you got six of them, seven of them. Now, he didn't understand the full meaning of the word swear. He didn't understand the full meaning of the word shavarot. He didn't understand those things, but Abraham did. How do you think Abraham knew that? I don't think Abimelech was surprised that it was seven. I don't think Abimelech was surprised that it was an oath. I think Abimelech knew what those words meant. So his question was, why are you setting them aside for? They are my witness that I dug this well. What did Abimelech do? He accepted it. And then it says there, verse 21, therefore he called the place, Abraham called the place Beersheba, because two of them swore an oath there. So Abimelech also had to swear an oath back. What do you think that Abimelech had to swear an oath back to? When he came there for Abraham to swear an oath, right? So what was he swearing an oath to? That the well was right. The well was Abraham. Now, what does a Beersheba mean, or Beersheba? It's actually two words in Hebrew. It's not one word. Better means well, right? And the other one is Sheba. The well of the sevenfold oath. Well of the sevenfold oath. That's a pretty hairy, that's a big one, isn't it? Now, later on in history, Beersheba became a very prosperous city. So this well was not just an ordinary well like I have in my backyard. It was a well with plenty of water that cities could work and depend upon that water for years. Yes.
Is this the same well that the woman at the well came to? Is this the same well that she was drawing from when Yeshua was speaking with her? I'm just curious.
Who?
The woman at the well in
It says it's Jacob's well. Jacob had his own wells.
A different one. Okay, and also wells. What did wells symbolize as far as I know water sometimes symbolizes the word and
right. It's life.
Repentance.
Okay. They say it's like water. Out of your belly will flow. Okay. Out of your well will flow life. Okay. So it is a spiritual terminology, and that's true.
There's wells. Sorry, excuse me. They are holes. They're holes in the ground. Most of the instances which the well is used or termed throughout the entire Tanakh is almost always used to symbolize somebody dying.
Right.
A death of someone.
It's also trying to
whether you're thrown, the word for pit, the word for well is the same thing. So whether you're thrown into it or whether you're hiding into it, it's almost always used for death. It's supposed to be symbolic of death of Messiah in various ways. This particular well, though, no one goes in it. So it's not symbolic of a grave, so it's symbolic of something else. But that's usually what's most commonly used for, is the form of the grave or to die.
And the word, you know, if we're talking about the oath, the swear, it's like saying, I will sevenfold myself. I will complete it sevenfold. Remember why Peter made a statement? Remember he said the Messiah? After the Messiah said, unto you was given power to bind and loose on earth. And then Peter says, okay, how many times do I have to forgive my brother? Seven times? Complete? And after that, it's all with. He said, what did he say? Don't know. He said 7 times 70. And he multiplied it quite a bit. So that's where that term comes from. We understand why Peter said what he said, because it's very common. You could break an oath after the seventh. If after the seventh one happens, an oath is broken, you don't have to forgive them anymore. You could take vengeance on them. You broke the oath. Now, so far, it's just an interesting approach. The last part of this particular chapter has a very unusual thing taking place. Right? What did Abraham do? He planted a tree in Beersheba. Why? That tree only shows up 3 times in prophecy. I mean, the book, in the Torah. The old book, the whole book of Genesis, the Tanakh. One's in Samuel 22, verse 6. And that one is in 1 Samuel 32, verse 13. Why this tree? What is the meaning of this tree? I mean, it's not like an olive tree. It's not like an apple tree. What kind of tree is it? And he said something interesting. And that's where he called on the name of Yahuwah. So he's calling upon Yahuwah, the everlasting Elohim. He plants a tree. Yes, Ellie.
Well, isn't a tamarisk a form of a pine tree? Don't they usually put markers as rocks? Maybe there were no big rocks to mark something, and he marked it with a tree. It's hard to deny something that has a mark.
This particular tree, okay, is very interesting. It's characterized by brittle, pokey stuff. It also has feathery branches and tiny, tiny-like leaves. So I'm saying, okay, does this plant bear fruit? Doesn't look like it. It's an unusual plant. It's characteristic of that particular area. You won't find it in the United States of America. It won't survive here. But it survives on a barren land, barren area. And the other meaning of this, I've done some research, the best that I could find about this, there's another meaning. But some of your translations might say he planted a grove. That's not a real good word. That's not what Hebrew has to say at all. Some of your translations may have the word grove in there. He didn't plant a grove. He planted a tree. Now, the other definition of the tree, I read from a writer, he researched in the 19th century. I think it was 1850 or something like that. This also refers to a meaning of a very large tree. Okay, very large tree. Fascinating. When Saul heard that David and his men who were with him had been discovered, now Saul was staying in Gibbereth under a tamarisk tree. So the tree was very large. It wasn't a little small tree. It was very big. And he was underneath that tree. That thing, right? Now let's go on the next one. And they took their bones and buried them under the tamarisk tree. And they fasted for 7 days. So those are the other two places that word shows up. Now, my question I have to ask you is this. Abraham planted a tree. And it's supposed to be a picture of something. What was that tree supposed to show us? He called upon the name and the ever lasting Elohim. A tree is planted for a reason in relationship to Yahuwah, or Yahweh, the everlasting God. Isn't that an interesting thought? That's why it's planted, right? That's what it says. Do I got it wrong? Or just, he decided to plant a tree? No. He went on his way to do this at this particular place of Beersheba. Okay. What was Elohim showing us by having that tree being planted?
The Lord has been our dwelling place in all generations. So it represents the Lord being our dwelling place. He's our covering. He's our everlasting arms.
Okay.
I was going to say that the tree is a witness of God, everlasting.
It's a witness of God of what?
Of his everlasting.
Everlasting. Okay, now we're getting close to it. Because that was the statement behind it. Something about this tree to represent something about God. And it's supposed to represent something about God who's everlasting. What does that word mean? It's olam, right? We know what that word means, right? Forever. You know what the written word means? That which is hidden. That which you cannot see. That's what's put in secret. Unable to notice and recognize. So you have this tree being planted, represents Elohim, and it's supposed to be for everlasting Elohim, and the root word says, you can't find him. He's hidden. He's hidden? He's in secret. He's in secret? Is God really in secret? When you look at the word olam, it's very fascinating to know. It's always been translated as, you know, the long enduring one, or the one of antiquity, forever. And forever and forever, everlasting. But the root word is to hide, to conceal. And another way of looking at it is that, you know, I've explained this before, that if it's a mountain range, like we have here, we're in a valley, you cannot see Olam. Why? Because the mountains is hiding something. The mountain is blocking the view. You cannot see anything unless you do something. What must you do to see? You have to rise above and climb to the peak. Then you can olam. Then you can see forever, because that's basically the word means to see. To see forever. Or to be forever. So this tree is telling us something. Yes, you can look at a tree. It's hiding something. It's concealing something. What is it hiding? What is it concealing? It's concealing Elohim. It's concealing God. But it's just a tree. That's why he called upon the name. That's fascinating when you stop and think about this. It took me a while to figure out, why is it hidden for? There's another meaning for it in Hebrew, by the way. It means when you are in the point of olam, it's at the point of vanishing point. You cannot see the end of the point. Why? It seems to be that you keep going after the end of the point, the point still is there. You'll never come to the end. You'll never come to the end. This is where God is called the everlasting one. There is no ending to him. Doesn't say the beginning, just says there's no ending to him. And like the tree being planted, it's a big tree. But you don't see God. All you see is the massiveness of him. This is all symbolic. All symbolic. So we look at it, not this tree, this particular story, It is. It's like one can see over the object that is blocking. Let's say you go up over the hill, and you see over the hill, which is blocking the vanishing point. It's blocking, in a sense, who God is. It's a very fascinating knowing the word of that word. And it's just a, not myself, I think it's very fascinating to know. It is a, it's like a never-ending thing. And we have this thing in the book of Daniel, right? About some kind of rock coming down. And it says, of his kingdom, there is no end. It keeps on not getting bigger. It keeps on forever and forever and can never be come to an end. Never coming to an end. So when we look at the word Olam, and it's a very interesting point here in the 21st chapter, at the concluding point. Now, the first part of this chapter was about the birth of Isaac, right? And then had to do with Hagar, you know, and then kick her out, right? And now we're back to what the 20th chapter was talking about. The king. The 20th chapter. And there comes in this conclusion, and he says something. I just find this very fascinating when I look at this thing. I may have it all wet behind the ears, and I probably do most of the time. Anyway, I just find it very fascinating that he planted this tree. He called upon the name. He planted the tree first, and there called upon the name of Yahuwah, the everlasting Elohim. That tree is a mystery. Is it not? I don't fully see it. I don't fully understand it. But nonetheless, Abraham saw something. Why do I know he saw something? What did the 20th chapter say? Abraham is my prophet. In the last part of this book, Abraham is giving us a prophecy. Isn't it fascinating? Ever look at it from that point of view? When we reach the end of Abraham's time, we're going to reach into the book of Hebrews to see a few things there, what he has to say about Abraham, who saw things that no one else saw. Yes?
Well, another thing to look at a tree, especially big trees, such as a living pillar. You know, he always erected pillars at points of being memorials. The tree, yeah, in a sense, is a memorial, especially the long living ones. You think of the olive trees, yes, redwood trees, etc., the Joshua trees, etc. Those live hundreds, thousands of years.
Yeah.
So you put that there, and if people remember who planted that tree, that's a part of a pillar.
Yeah, and the person who wrote this book, section of the back history, still saw the tree. It was still there. Wow. And Beersheba, the city became a big city, by the way. Beersheba wound up being a big metropolis city. People lived there and worked there. They built homes there because that well was so large and deep that there's plenty of water to house an awful lot of people and take care of anything that the people needed, including the animals and their own usage. But remember, Abraham, we're going to do in Hebrews, wasn't looking for a city that people did.